Welcome to Suffolk Matters, where all of Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News, opinions, and insights you won't hear anywhere else. Here's your host, the president of New York's largest independent union, Suffolk AME's Dan Levler.
Welcome to another edition of Suffolk Matters on Walk 97.5 and 94.3 The Shark, where Suffolk County meets the men and women of Suffolk AME. News and views you can't hear anywhere else.
So my guest this morning, again, Peter Abate. And Peter Abate was the assemblyman in the 49th District in Brooklyn for a long time, 30-some-odd years, 36, if I remember correctly.
36.
And also, you know, working with AME now, with our independent expenditure accounts, and really gave us a lot of great advice going into November of last year, trying to, you know, make sure that we had our bases covered in terms of what we were looking at for endorsed candidates. And we were successful. We brought in County Executive Ed Romaine, a lot of other legislators that we backed. We had a very good track record this year in terms of who we endorsed and who came into office. But, you know, I guess my first question for you really is, are you surprised to see Suffolk County leaning as far right as it did, you know, compared to the rest of the state?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I really want to congratulate you and AIM as a whole for the work you did, the civic involvement this year in the election for the county exec and local legislators. Just seeing so many people involved in an election process was great to see. So yeah. Congratulations again. And as you say, Suffolk County was leaning Republican, but, you know, much different than parts of the state. But I also noticed in the Republican vote that basically it was not an extreme Republican vote. It was right. A Republican vote based on, you know, issues that were concerned to them in the district and not that far extreme Republican vote, more of the old-fashioned moderate vote.
Right, right. So I guess, you know, another way to say it is the individuals who go in and they don't know the issues, they don't know what's going on, they look for the designation at the end of the name. They say, hey, I'm a Republican. Anyone on the ballot that has an R after their name, that's who I'm going to vote for, or has a D after, you know, whatever their party affiliation may be. And that's not really what you saw. You saw it was issue-based.
It was issue-based. There's always a group that's going to vote R or D.
Sure, sure.
But there is a group of people who look at the individual. And I think when you looked at county exec, they looked at the records of both candidates.
Right.
And they saw who would be better for them. So I think it's a well-informed electorate. And I think that's part of the civic involvement that this radio show and other people around the county let people know.
Yeah. You know, and listen, I have to say that our membership really got engaged and involved in a way we haven't seen before. You know, this race, I think, was important to them for a number of reasons. And one of them was, I think, really, you know, the time had come for a change. They had lived under a county executive for, you know, 12 years, and the way their policies were affecting their work life and their ability to get things done. They wanted to see a change. And so, you know, again, I think it became personal for them as well.
Yeah, and I think the especially for your membership, I think they saw the issues out there. We had a forum, a number of debates and groups going on. So they saw the issues that really pertained to them. It was the pocketbook issues.
Sure.
That were important to them.
Yeah, you know, and we're seeing the effect of that already, you know. So County Executive Romaine, someone who, again, has been in government for, you know, decades, really had an understanding right out of the gate coming in and immediately started fixing problems. There's the way that government works that you only know if you work in government. And so having somebody with government experience really is going to pay dividends right out of the gate.
I think you see that, you know, all the time when you have someone that's been there for a while, that even though they change offices,
right,
they have a basic premise what they want to do when they get in.
Yeah. You know, so turning our eyes, I guess, towards the state now, you know, we've gotten through the November election. Suffolk County is, you know, humming along and moving along. But now the state has come out with their budget, you know, and they spent the better part of the fall and the winter, you know, preparing and then now laying out. So I guess, you know, first and foremost, just a general idea, you know, from your perspective, do you see anything in this budget that really surprises you, you know, with all your years of having to review these things?
No, well, I think it was very light on, you know, on issues that pertain to the average men and women of our state. I was shocked not to see anything, and I know we're going to pertain to the working people and wages. Nothing on the workforce issues at all involved in this budget. Very little talking about. She did. The one highlight, I think, would be on health care and mental health.
Right.
I think that's important for everyone to know. But that was the highlight to me of not much discussion on local governments.
Right.
Not workforce issues. Very little on, you know, environmental issues. So it wasn't a strong budget the way I look at it. And but that now takes place in the process.
Sure, sure. And, you know, I mean, for those unfamiliar with the process, now is the point in time where they go through the budget line by line. We discuss everything in terms of individual issues and bills. That'll all kind of whittle its way down. And while that process is happening, there's different, I guess, senators and assembly people that have things that they're working on as well. So you try and fold in what you can into the budget process. And then when it all comes down to it, and there's a vote on the budget, there's that final little push to kind of try and shuffle the cards around. And
yeah, the budget over the years have changed. It used to be basically budget, funding of agencies. More and more policy decisions are being put in, sometimes by the governor, other times by the legislature. And there's always the argument, well, it shouldn't be policy. But if one side wants the policy, and then they fight for that and not.
Right.
But what you see local legislators, and this year there's been so many changes and turnovers in committees that really you had senior committee chairs who knew what they did the year before or 2 years before and what hadn't been accomplished.
Right.
So they were looking at a budget to see if any of those previous issues were there.
Right.
And then trying to make sure that they can get those issues put in the forefront. So that's what's going on now.
Right.
I think the governor proposed, and whether it's committee chairs, senators or assembly members, and local legislators are trying to get their stuff in the budget.
Right. Yeah. And, so you talk about having senior people walking away and new people coming in. And, that immediately brings to mind for me, the shift in skills, right? We've seen this before where we've had some people there for a long time. It's easy to have conversations with them, address an issue. And then when they do what they do, they know who to call. They know, when to raise an issue, how to get something in front of a committee, how to get it onto the floor. And newer people don't necessarily have that skill set. And when I say newer people, they could be someone that's sat on the committee for 12, 15 years. But if they weren't the chair, they weren't doing that part of the work. It's always something that I think about. You sometimes see this celebration in the world when, somebody longstanding is out of office and somebody new comes in and everybody's like, okay, change. Yeah, well, part of that change is going to be a slowdown in effectiveness.
Yeah, it's also, committee staffs and all what you...
Right.
And what the new member brings with them to the committee and the agenda. You're right. Unfortunately, nowadays, whether it's in the Senate or the Assembly, you're giving a committee assignment, maybe not so much for the issues you specialize in, but your seniority and what the leadership needs to fill at the time.
Right.
Very rarely does someone from a committee really get to be the chair of that committee anymore these days. You move on.
Right.
Like the chair recently in the Assembly of Economic Development became the labor chair.
Yeah.
So they're just a totally different issue in a sense.
Right.
And they switch back and forth. But, there is something to say about seniority with chairmen on committees. And also the committee process is to have one or two people who are not the chair involved. So, for future chairs of those committees.
Sure, sure. That makes sense. I guess I'd be missing an opportunity if I didn't talk to you about your years of experience here. We talk about, so the state budget comes out and now, folks like myself for AME and, all different types of people from all over the state are going to look into, hey, we like this, we don't like this, who do we speak to, whatever else. But, you've lived it, right? You were there, you were chairing a committee, forceful in your opinion on the floor as an assemblyman. So what was the process like for you, when this would come out? And I've been in your office when 50 people try and walk in all at the same time.
So the governor, proposes the budget. You get the chair of a committee and the staff start to go over as soon as it comes out. And then they have budget hearings where shareholders that really care about it will come and testify at budget hearings. But the most important part is when people, like you said, you've come to my office.
Right.
When people come with an issue that the governor has in the budget or, which is also an important part, something that's in the budget they don't like.
Right.
You know, that they don't want in there. And I think the important part is the contact, where they call them lobbyists or, you know, people there come in and explain what that issue in the budget might be to the chair. Mm-hmm. And you get a different perspective of what the governor's thinking, what the legislature is thinking, and what the people who it's going to affect think. So right. I think that's an important part of it. And then it's the chair's. You know, the chair has to explain to the members of the committee where the direction they want to go in.
Right.
And from there, when you get a consensus of the committee, the chair brings it to the leadership of their house.
Right. Yeah. And so, I mean, what you're hearing is just a basic explanation, but some of these conversations can get pretty heated, you know, because sometimes there's 2, 3, 4, 5 different perspectives on the same issue, and they all make excellent points.
Not most of the time, but quite a few times I've had, you know, when you have close friends and people you've worked with, you know, in different organizations on opposite sides of an issue, even though basically they've always been in agreement. And that's a tough part to get to when you're trying to come to a solution in the budget. You got to remember, even though right now both the Senate and Assembly are Democratic,
mm-hmm.
they might not always agree on a specific issue.
Right.
So those two parts, the Senate and the Assembly, have to get together before they actually get to the governor.
Right.
To debate the governor on the budget. So it really is a three-way agreement, or basically to the Senate and Assembly versus the governor on a budget, or with the governor on the issue.
Right.
But it does come down to the three branches of government. And the committee chairs play an important part of that, mm-hmm. probably more so now than it did, and more so in the Senate than it did in the Assembly over the years, where central staff, permanent government.
Right.
Was there, like you say, talking about the chairs,
mm-hmm.
that there are people on in central staff that make a lot of decisions and help the new chairs out, sometimes hinder the new chairs.
Yeah, that's very true. and when you say central staff and permanent government, they're not elected in. They have a job, they have a position, they work that position, and if the person they're working for changes, they still go on. So, you know.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. And some of the things that they care about or don't care about, that plays an effect too.
It's the effect of the member.
Right.
Whether he or she, as they come in as the chair, is going to be forceful enough or cares enough.
Right.
I mean, the sad part is you'd be surprised that there are people in political power who don't care about legislation, care more about politics.
Right.
Than doing the legislation.
Yeah.
You know, you're seeing that in the Congress right now.
We sure are, yes. And another thing I think about is, you know, it's New York State. It's very large, very diverse. You know, if we're on the island and always involved in Long Island issues with Nassau, Suffolk, whatever. And you forget we've got big rural parts of the state, very different than what suburban, you know, values are and concerns are when it comes to legislation. And then obviously everybody knows the city. But, you know, an upstate Democrat may have very different views and ways of dealing things than a downstate Democrat.
Most of the time they do.
Yes.
You know, and issues. And it's, you know, combining the entire state, whether it's out here in Long Island or middle in New York City or someplace in Ithaca, New York, to try to get a consensus of the members to vote on a bill and to learn. And that's why I was never in favor of term limits. The longer you're there, the more you learn if you're dedicated to going on. And that. So you learn different parts of the state. You get to travel. You talk to your colleagues where you might think this issue was great until you find out the effect it might have, you know, on someone else. I mean, when I first got there, I was adopted. Most city legislators are adopted by the Farm Bureau in New York State.
Right.
And they come once or twice a year to present their issues that are concerned to the agricultural part of our state. And I, over the years, I became good friends with a lot of them and learned a lot that I wouldn't know from a kid growing up in Brooklyn.
Sure, right. You know, yeah, not a lot, you know, of dairy farms in Brooklyn and wheat fields and whatever else. Sure.
One of the largest distributors of yogurt in the country from New York.
Right. Yeah. And New York produces a lot of great products, right? So there is, we're talking again, business interest, labor force interest. You know, again, we've got a ton of retirees. Suffolk County specifically has a very large veteran population. You know, there's all these different groups. And so I know from conversations I've had with people where they're frustrated and they say, you know, but I see it this way. And why can't everybody see it this way? Well, there are a lot of different values out there in terms of what's important and what's not.
And the key is to try to put them all together, you know, sure, get a consensus on, you know, we're all here, well, those who get elected are all here to really try to help their constituency.
Right.
So they're looking at their local constituency, the broader picture than that, but then the state constituency,
sure,
you know, to see what we can do for them. I mean, going back to the agriculture, the love of agriculture is why I love coming out to Suffolk County.
Sure.
You know, whether in the spring or the summer, or just talking to some people about the Botanic Bay scallops.
Yes.
And everything to come out here for. It's a great part of the state. It's a suburb, but it's also a big agricultural part of the state.
Yeah. And listen, if I want a Manhattan special, I got to drive into Brooklyn.
You got to drive into Brooklyn or an A-cream.
Because I can't really find it around here, right?
A good A-cream.
Yeah. You know, getting into like one of those issues, this is something that's very important for folks in government. And I want to try and explain it a little bit just so it you know, maybe you have some context of why we care about it. And that's it. That's the issue on Tier 6 reform. And so Tier 6 basically is a class of workers that are hired into government now that are hired under new kind of operating rules, right? And before that was Tier 5 for like about a second, Tier 4 for the longest time, 3, 2, 1, all of these things. They all have different rules. And to put it as simply as possible, someone being hired today does worse off than someone being hired 20 years ago inside of this state tier system because of certain rules. Now, this passed under Andrew Cuomo back in the day, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning, one of those kinds of things. We are seeing, you know, across the country, it's not unique to Suffolk County. It is not unique to Long Island. It's not unique to the state of New York. It's everywhere. There's a very hard time with recruiting and retaining people for government work. And one of the things that you had in the state of New York was you weren't going to get rich doing government work, right? But you would do okay, and you would have job security, and at the end, you'd have health care, you'd have a pension that came in, and it's modest. You know, most people think pensions, and they see the sensationalized news story of, you know, someone who had a ton of overtime and a high-paying job, and now they're getting hundreds of thousands of dollars in retirement, whatever. But the average person working in government, when they retire, $35,000, $45,000 a year. It's a static number, more or less. And as things get more expensive, they don't get more money, and they've got to kind of...
Good example. Yeah, no, you've hit on two important issues. I mean, you know, Tier 6, I think, is really, really hurt, whether it was the county, the city, or the state workforce.
Right.
People went to work, as you just said, went to work for government because of the benefits that were there. Weren't great benefits, but it was stability.
Right.
It was stability. They knew they were going to put 20, 25 years in with a pension, with health care and all. Right now, we're down that 100, really, literally, I think on the state level, it's at least 10,000, not counting the county's jobs.
Sure.
People do not apply for them anymore.
Yeah.
And it's really
Suffolk
hurting.
Suffolk County, 2,280 vacant positions just in the last operating budget.
And that's hurting the general public and lack of services.
Sure.
There's no reason why we shouldn't have the best people, the brightest people applying for government positions. And we had that at one time when we had decent, not great benefits, but benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Benefits so someone can support a family and know that there's something down the road.
Right.
I mean, Tier 6, and that was something I was disappointed, didn't see anything in the budget at all for that. And I know a lot of the labor unions and groups are looking to get equity in that tier system, and it's important.
It is.
It's important not only for the workers. It's important for the constituencies out there who they serve. If you have less people doing the job, it's going to be a longer time for you as a resident to get that service.
Right.
You know, and you're paying the taxes, yeah. You know, on that. And then you say, you know, cost of living, COLA.
Right.
There's very little COLA increase. I mean, you know, on an average, maybe it's like every year, maybe $20 in a check, which
right.
is nothing compared to inflation. So that's something that has to be looked at. Those are two major issues that I was disappointed not to see in this year's budget. And hopefully people will go up there and negotiate something in the budget, and if not in the budget, bringing it up in the budget so it can be passed before the end of session in June.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's not an issue, you know, AME is going to be quiet about, and a number of other, you know, government employee-facing unions. We're going to continue beating this drum, and the main reason is because of what you just said. We want to have the best workforce for the people, right? Our membership, other folks in government, they're altruistic by nature, right? They could have taken other jobs. They wanted the stability, but they wanted to help their community. There's a sense of worth that comes with the job that's above just you know, compensation and benefits. There is that, you know, I am helping my community. That's not enough all on its own, right? That's why you don't have people volunteering for all of the available jobs in government. They take a wage and they get benefits and they, you know, get time off and whatever else.
But the handwriting's on the wall. I mean, the West, it's never been that you have that many vacancies in positions. And the answer is, I mean, you don't have to go any further. It's what you're paying and what the benefits are to that workforce. Young people are just not going to devote their life, you know, to their community and not have some security in the background.
Right. So talking about things that have changed for working people or being proposed to change for working people, another issue is the COVID sick leave. It's proposed to sunset that now. The original legislation didn't sunset it. And the fact of the matter was, you know, this is something that we're still dealing with, right? We're still seeing people go out with COVID.
It makes no sense to, you know, in the governor's budget to end it. COVID's there. It's not as dramatic or, you know, out in the front pages. But if someone got COVID 2 years ago and got sick or died, no different than someone getting COVID now. It shouldn't get those same benefits.
Right.
In there. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's just gone completely like measles was at one time, you know.
Right.
But,
right.
you know, it's eradicated. But now that it's coming back. But the same thing with COVID, whether it's 100 people in a hospital or 6 people with it. I don't understand the reasoning why you would... It sunset that.
Right.
It's only going to save a few dollars.
Right.
I mean you're right. Talking in the major scheme of things. How much more is it going to cost and really save?
It strikes me as a piece of legislation that isn't looking to solve the problem on its face. I always got the sense, looking at something like this, that it was a fear of expanding, right? So it's like, if we don't get rid of this, someone may push to add the flu. Right. Or someone may push to, you know, whatever. And the idea of having common sense benefits for working people in the state of New York, in this country. I mean, why wouldn't we? Why wouldn't we? I remember it was a couple of years ago and I started talking about it. And I said, listen, I fear and I know that certain places are already talking about bringing back child labor because they can't get the workforce the way they want it. And so they want to bring back child labor. My guess at the time. I was like, listen, I don't know if that's true or if it's false or whatever, blah, blah, blah. But it has continued to happen. States continue to push legislation. Just recently down in Florida, they're saying, let's allow our kids to work full time. They're pushing for full time work for kids under 16 years old. And we're seeing injuries and deaths on the job because of this younger workforce. You know, if we don't stay vigilant, if we don't insist on keeping common sense legislation like this and working towards expanding it so that it makes sense for everybody and it captures everybody. Not, you know, it's not just a us thing. It's an everybody thing. Right.
Yeah. But when you talk about workforce issues and whether it's like something child labor or something, I think community should understand how important it is that the rules, regulations, the laws that were passed in the past, and whether it was through the labor movement or what, benefited the entire community. Like you said, whether it was children and child labor, whether right. it was health care for disease, some of those provisions were done that affect everyone in one sense of the word, you know, that they're so important. And to to chip away at them.
Right.
And Florida is a whole different story. Chipping away at things is really scary and sinful to me.
Yeah. So I listen, you know, and I hear, I don't want to, you know, I hear euphemisms out in the world, these talking points that are trying to chip away from the concept of the New Deal. And basically the way I looked at the New Deal was, you know, everyone shows up and you work and you make enough money to have a house and kids and a car and be able to eat and maybe go on a vacation and the whole nine, and to fight to take that away from people so that the people that have too much already can have more. It boggles my mind. But, you know, these are the things, you know, this is why labor's here. Yeah, we advocate on behalf of our members, but we're advocating for workers in general. The whole system is predicated on the idea that people get up and go to work. If people don't get up and go to work, the whole idea of capitalism collapses.
It's gone.
Right?
But the idea is when you say, you know, you really try to do something for your members. By doing for your members, you're doing for the community at the same time. Sure. They are, you know, and people should look at it that way. When you talk, whether it was a county, a state, or a city worker, they live in the area. They are your neighbors. They do better. You do better.
Yeah.
You know, it shouldn't be like, why are they getting more than me? It should be, I want to get to that level.
Right.
Instead of taking away from them,
sure,
let's build up to that. Like I've always said that in the private sector sometimes, people look, you know, work in a bank or something, and say, well, I don't get that. And I say, well, you know, you don't have anyone representing you.
Yeah.
You know, you should be getting that. You should get an hour off for lunch, or you shouldn't have to work 9 hours.
It is funny, but there was another country, and there were bankers that felt like they weren't getting a good deal. So they went on strike, and after 9 months, they all came back to work because nobody actually cared about them and their issue, right? And by when I mean bankers, I don't mean workers at the banks. I mean the big bank owners, right? And everybody said, no, we'll get along just fine. But I remember the garbage strikes, right? I remember, you know, I mean, there are fundamental things that could happen in everybody's day-to-day lives. And things have to be so bad for you to say, I'd rather not go to work, I'd rather not make money, and I'd rather stand with my brothers and sisters and stop this thing from happening until conditions improve. Things have to be so bad. You know, I mean, people forget the labor movement. I mean, people used to die, you know? They used to send folks in with guns to just, you know, break up strikes, you know. So anyway, I don't want to get too preachy about all of that. I do want to talk. We're getting a little close on time here, and I do want to talk about, you know, you had your time in the assembly, also included you being on the Assembly Cities Committee.
Committee.
You chaired it. And so in Suffolk County, we are a donor county. We give more in taxes than we receive back in aid. And that's on two levels. We give more to the state than we get back, and we give more to the federal government than we get back. And so it's always of interest to us, you know, from my perspective, but also the government of Suffolk County does the same thing, and they go up and they advocate on behalf of its residents. So always of interest to us, how do we get more resources down here?
Eight localities, a major part of the budget, and there's an association of counties where your county executive, Romaine, will now go to and all to fight. That's a vital important, whether it's cities or counties or towns, when they're up there legislating, because that's dollar for dollar for your roads, for your hospitals, for your education and all. That's an important part of the budget. And hopefully, you know, and they've done a great job, the Association of Counties, coming up. You know, you got the mayor in New York City will come up and stress New York City. But when you're talking Suffolk, Nassau, you know, Cortland counties, that association is very important to coordinate the needs of every county in the state, and to make sure that, you know, funding levels, you know, increase proportionately.
Sure.
You know, you're right. You know, give back. I mean, I just heard this Sunday from Senator Schumer that this is the first year that, and I still found it hard to read, that New York will be getting more back from the federal government than we pay to them.
Probably the first time ever. Yeah.
So if that's true now, that should be the same thing, where counties should be getting back more money from the federal and the state government. Suffolk County shouldn't be supporting the state. The state and federal government should be supporting Suffolk County.
Sure. And, you know, it's not that we don't realize that other parts of the country or the state need help as well. But we need our fair share, right? And so we talk about We've used the expression before, unfunded mandates. And basically what that means is the state says to the county, you must provide this service and you must find the money to do it. P.S., we're going to take more of your money than we're going to give back to you and help on that. So we're done on time for this morning. I do appreciate you coming out.
It's always a pleasure.
Having this conversation with us. So I guess this morning, former Assemblyman Peter Abate, and again, on behalf of my members, I want to thank you for all that you did in this last election season, what you continue to do. And to our listeners, we'll speak to you next week.